Stream your favorite shows on ESPN975.com.
It's really quite simple.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank, Barry Laminek, and Nick Sciarra till 4 o'clock, two in the books, one to go, and we are very proud that you are a part of our show. We have covered the gamut on a lot of topics throughout the sports world and otherwise. We have a call holding. Adam will get to you. Barry has been patiently chuckling to himself about these text messages, which normally means that there is some kind of doomsday for me involved.
There may be one bad
one.
Maybe.
I figured.
But no, we had some good ones that I did want to read because, especially one about the Kaepernick situation. But this one says, exactly, Joel, it's highly frustrating that when I open up the ESPN app, there's an entire subcategory dedicated to tell you which players sat from which team. Like, they have, so apparently that's a thing where you can figure out, they have a category of who kneeled in each game. That's insane. That's a hot take, clickbait type of thing. It's
absolutely
insane. Somebody said the media is taking away the reason they're sitting or kneeling during the anthem and turn it into who is still doing it, which is the point we made a long time ago when we talked about it, is that getting lost into all of this is the reason why they're doing it. Someone said if I protest something during my work hours that distracted others, I would be fired. It's his job and should protest on his off time and not on the sidelines of an NFL game. That was from Jack in Spring. Somebody said that they, because I guess we were talking about when I said, you know, if you don't listen, if you leave, I'm not going to get mad. Somebody said, but I listen for Barry, not the cheesehead.
That was the chuckler.
That was the one. Somebody said, some PA guy at one of the 49ers away games has a chance to make himself internet famous if he'll just play the anthem while Cap is in a goal line situation, forcing him to stand through it or take a knee and lose it down.
That's great. They put some thought into that one.
That's why I wanted to read these, just so I could get to that one. That is a great text. And then someone said, you drive a Volkswagen Cabriolet convertible circa 1988.
I don't know who that was directed towards.
Well, it's when we were talking about.
We both were talking about what we drive.
They called you Joe instead of Joel.
Which is probably the 4-9-er.
And then
they me again.
Yeah, it was 281 this time.
Oh, darn it. That spoiled all that.
All right.
So there's something that's been very pressing with you. It's come up a little bit.
Yes.
But it definitely has to come up today, because if it doesn't, you'll tantrum right out of the living room into your room and shut the door.
I will.
So you want to talk about the ever flammable and now very entertaining Odell Beckham
Jr. Don't say that. It's not entertaining. I'm sick of it already. Like, listen, okay, so if you didn't see this weekend, Odell Beckham Jr., he went off. He scored a couple of touchdowns. But
he held a game.
He did. In the process of that, after every touchdown, now he runs to the net. Like the first time he did it,
so he did it against the Packers on Sunday Night Football.
When he finally got off the schneid, he ran over and hugged the net to kind of apologize and make up. That was hilarious. It seemed kind of spur of the moment, even though you knew it was planned. But it was one of those things where that's it. That's it. Sport. Way to bounce back. Way to get your head right. But now he's doing it. He ran over there and he laid down and covered himself in the net.
So he proposed.
And then he proposed.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, just stop. It was funny the first time you did it. It was entertaining. And it was the right thing to do to kind of make fun of yourself. But now it's just ridiculous and annoying. And of course, like anything, they've got to take it too far and keep doing it. It's like, dude, just stop already. It's not entertaining. Now it just looks contrived and you look crazy again.
A lot of ex-players have chimed in and said, look, this is getting to the point where you're going to cost your team. And he almost did. He almost did this last weekend. That's a 2-point game. That's a field goal game, right?
Yep.
And he took his helmet off and gave up 15 yards.
He was just making those, oh, I don't care, you can find me motions to the referee. You know, you can throw the flag. I don't care. It's like, dude, you could have blown the game right there.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that you're right. He had the look of I don't care until he started looking at some of his teammates who really did care and started to contemplate the fact that if you piss this one away for us, there's not going to be any turning back on this one, because you're going to have some angry, big-time, large men in the locker room to deal with, because they've had about enough. So it's interesting to see. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I think that it took its course. He had a little fun with it on Sunday Night Football. He had the national stage. You know, again, some of this where he actually said, you know, that football isn't fun anymore, and everybody's made him the villain ever since the Josh Norman stuff was a bit much. And it is what you make of it, right? And if you just make fun of yourself, like you always tell me I need to do more of.
Yeah, you do.
You know, the big time thing is that you can just get by with all of this, right? But now this is 3 weeks in a row where we just have to see the antics, and he's getting real close to costing his team.
Yeah, and it's just, it's getting played already. Like, there's that fine line of, okay, make fun of yourself. You know you screwed up, but don't overdo it, because now it's just annoying, and now you're making it, again, about you and drawing the attention to you, when what you should have done is poked fun of yourself like the first time that you did, and then go back to just being a team player. Yep. Taking your helmet off, telling the officials you don't care, motioning that you don't care if they throw a flag, running straight to the net and laying down. And just stop, dude. You're a nut. You're like, you literally, it looks like he has lost his mind.
Yeah, so Ben McAdoo, basically the head coach who used to be the Green Bay offensive coordinator, and I feel for the guy, because it seems like one of those situations where you have a player with one of those ultra-strong personalities that's hard to lasso, and he best basically feels like he may be losing control. But he says, you know, Monday he said he knows we can't have it. But Beckham tried to defend himself by saying the penalty only applies when you take it off on the field and in the field of play. And he said he basically did it after he had left over on the sideline area and was not technically on the field. As part of the celebration, he's going to take his helmet off in the end zone. Dean Blandino, the league's vice president of officiating, said in the explanatory video, that's a violation of the rule. You cannot take your helmet off as part of a celebration, a demonstration, or as part of a confrontation with an opponent or a game official. Blandino added, Beckham actually committed two fouls on the play. You see, he goes to the sideline, says something to the game officials. Mm-hmm. That would be unsportsmanlike conduct as well. We only enforced one foul, implying that he could have gotten both of them.
Because the sidelines don't extend forever. They're like from what, the 20s? They go to 20
to
20?
Well, there's the box that the players are supposed to stay in.
That's the sideline. Yeah. That's where you can take your helmet off. So just the fact that you're outside of the end zone by the stands, that doesn't constitute the sidelines. You're taking your helmet off in an area you're not supposed to, because you technically just scored. The play just ended. He's a fool is what it is. He looks like a fool right now.
So McAdoo also said that Beckham came up to him right after it happened. They had a discussion about it. He knows we can't have it. He knows that. He went out and wanted to fire up the kickoff coverage and the defense. I doubt that highly, but that's what Coach McAdoo said. Eli Manning said, with the win, you can ignore it a little bit easier. It's one of those deals where you can get real sick of it if he's going to if he's not going out there and making plays. But when he goes out and has a couple of huge catches and a 200-plus yard game and a game-winning touchdown, you still want him to be smarter, but you accept it a little easier. Which basically goes to the old adage, if you're kicking tail and you're your best player, you can get away with murder.
I think you're just excusing the behavior at that point. If I'm Eli Manning, I step up and say, I don't care what you did. You can't put the team in a position to potentially cost us the game. And that's what he did, regardless of the catches for touchdowns. Stop.
And at least the kicking net is the one that comes out the best in this, because he gets to put a ring on it.
It's old already. He needs to stop doing it. It's silly.
But the more people on the sidelines that are chuckling and watching and encouraging every time he does something like that, he's not going to
stop. You saw how many photographers were around him? Yeah. Oh, it was just sickening. I was just like, God, thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
You're welcome.
It drove me nuts.
Hey, we're here for you.
Yeah.
So we got that out of the way, and we'll see what you think about OBJ. If you want to chime in on that or anything else, we do have a new phone board. It's completely open now, so you can join in on the conversation. 713-780-ESPN. We're here till 4 o'clock, so we've got some time left. So why don't you call in or text us? The texts are all buried. And he does enjoy them. I normally take the butt of those, so that's fine too. And if you want to tweet us, it's at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at No Hit Nick.
Somebody had a question on the text, which, I mean, we kind of talked about, but they said, how would you rank the conferences as of right now, not at the end of the season? And I said earlier when I was going through the different rankings, I'm going to assume that he meant college, but I think the Big Ten is the best conference right now. I mean, if you look at it, four of their teams are in the top 10. They almost comprise half of the top 10, with the SEC having two, the ACC having two, and then Big 12, Pac-12 having one each. So
yeah, and even with the Badgers being in it, I mean, I just look at the Big Ten, and I just... That's for me, and Ohio State has done a lot to kind of create that attitude around the Big Ten, like the SEC has with Alabama. But the Big Ten definitely has proven this year that they are on the same level as the SEC for sure, but that they might be the best conference of football. But again, I will say and continue to say it remains to be seen till the end of the season.
Well, Big Ten, I think right now, but I think the deepest conference and is the SEC. I mean, they have the most in the top 25. Yes, we can argue Ole Miss and LSU. Trapp's argument on Twitter the other day was, well, who has Auburn beat to be in at the 21st position? And my point was, hell, after 10, you could make that argument for anyone. I mean, if you look at Florida State, his own school, who have they beaten to warrant being ranked as high as they are?
What was the one that I sent you about
Tennessee?
Tennessee 3-3, but was it Tennessee? Someone's 3-3.
Yeah, somebody about
first time that a 3-3 team's been in the top 25 since
Ole
like 09.
Ole Miss.
Yeah,
now, Ole Miss, so. I'll give you Ole Miss and LSU at 23-25. But who are you going to put in their place? Who out there? Go look at
Appalachian State looks really tough.
Dude,
right
Western
now,
Michigan.
Barry.
Western Michigan is ranked 20th. Who the hell is Western Michigan?
The same as Appalachian State with different colored uniforms.
Exactly. Who have they beat to be warranted? So, I mean, you can say that about a lot of these teams outside of 10 or 15. So that's not an argument that I would stand on, especially if I'm trying to justify rankings.
I'm going to tell you an argument that I would stand on. That is the fact that if you are looking for an energy provider and one that's never going to let you down and always have your back, I suggest Infuse Energy. My man Josh Pesikoff has a great locally owned and operated company here in Houston, Texas called Infuse Energy. And I'm telling you, they are loyal. They are trustworthy. They are just like a friend. And they are going to always have your back and provide you with the best energy at the best rates that they can possibly provide you. And Josh is so passionate about it that he is the CEO of the company. But if you have a customer service issue, you can reach him directly and he will talk to you about and solve your customer service issue as best as he can each and every time. That's because that's how he believes is the best way to do business at Infuse Energy. They build high value relationships. The quality of your experience is the number one focus that they have. They never waver from that. If you ever consider leaving them for any reason other than price, they want to know about the problem and they will fix it. As I mentioned, you can reach Josh directly. They get you a clear understanding of what your program is and what they are providing. They never confuse you, try to be deceitful, try to be obscure, or try and trick you. They'll always understand for you the electricity plan, explain your bill, how much your plan costs, and when your contract expires. They go above and beyond to make sure you're never in the dark about anything. As I mentioned, Houston-owned and operated. For retail and for your private home, it's affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that always has your back, and it's 100% green energy at your fingertips. You can sign up and choose a green plan, which will offset your electricity use with renewable energy credits. That helps decrease your carbon footprint, and that's another reason why you can't go wrong with Infuse. InfuseEnergy.com, call 844-INFUSE2. And by the way, if you use that code ESPN975 today, you receive a $25 bill credit right off the top. Infuse Energy.
Is Dick's Sporting Goods Week on ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
So, Joel and Barry till 4, and one of the topics we haven't got to yet, Barry, is this whole discussion about the Big 12, which has reared its ugly head again because the Big 12 came out yesterday and said basically there will be no expansion. So all these schools that spent all this money on these presentations and tried to make a case for the fact that they belong in a big-time conference was for naught. Tillman Fertitta getting involved in the U of H case.
Did he offer free steaks from Salt
No, but he offered up a lot of coin to do a lot more renovations to Hoffines and do a lot of things on campus.
Yeah.
That, again, was going to make it even more attractive, the U of H case, to be in the Big 12. A lot of people saying that three schools and three schools alone were able to kibosh the U of H effort because of the fact that...
Can I guess which they were?
Absolutely.
Does it say who it was?
I know who they are.
You do?
Yes.
I'm going to guess OU.
Correct.
UT.
Correct.
Baylor.
No.
Ooh.
Oklahoma State.
Really?
Yes, because they believe, or at least according to sources, those three schools have the biggest footprint in the city of Houston and the state of Texas for recruiting, and they believe that it would hurt their programs on the football side immensely, and also on the basketball side, if, in fact, U of H was then in the Big 12 and they were all recruiting for the same players for the same abilities to play in the same conference.
They're already going to be competing against U of H anyways if U of H continues to play at the level that
but
they're playing.
But I think that's all factoring in one major component, which is Tom Herman.
Yeah.
So Tom Herman,
I think it factors in money. I think they chose not to expand because they don't want to split money with two more teams.
Well, and everybody says, well, UT was leading the charge no matter who other, what other schools were involved, and they said, why does UT have that much pull? Well, the Longhorn Network alone says a lot as to why they do. But
does anybody still watch that? Does anybody watch that at all?
I've never gotten it in the first place.
I haven't.
Like, even if there was a Badger network, I wouldn't watch the Badger network regularly.
You're talking about the Longhorn network?
Yeah.
No, no way.
I don't understand why that's still a thing.
Okay, but anyway, the main topic here that I think everybody reacted to was not just complete, oh, and Nick, you're a U of H guy.
Yeah.
But I think that when you heard the news, you didn't just go, oh, man, we're not getting a conference. I think the first thought that most people had on their mind was, oh, man, we're losing Tom Herman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the immediate thought that most U of H fans thought, and that, including myself. I mean,
yeah, that's the overriding concern. And the belief being that if Tom Herman was in a big-time conference and that projected to have more revenues, he could get paid more, he could be on a national stage more, he could play against big-time competition more, and therefore he'd want to stay. Otherwise, we've already covered the USC's and the LSU's and the UT's and everybody saying that they're going to go after Tom Herman. Well, Hunter Yurecek, the AD of U of H, had a little press conference today, and he decided to address what he's trying to do to make sure Herman...
He joined Nate and Crate on 1560.
Okay, so he joined my man Nate Griffin and Patrick Creighton on 1560, and he addressed that situation point blank.
We've got to be reasonable in that commitment, but yes, I mean, we are... willing, and I'm working on the parameters of making a new extended commitment to Coach Herman to retain him as our head football coach. I mean, I think you talk to Coach Herman, and he expresses a great affinity and love for the University of Houston, obviously for our football program and the young men that are a part of that football program and that have committed to be a part of that in the future. I think him and his family both love having their residence in the city of Houston and what the city offers. And so I think it's going to take a phenomenal, and I mean that phenomenal opportunity for Coach Herman for him to leave the University of Houston.
Nothing makes me happier. I don't have a stake in the game. I obviously did not go to school here. I just like Tom Herman. I like everything he does. I like his approach. I mean, whether you like him kissing the players on the cheek when they come off the bus or walk in the stadium or not, the man shows passion. The man shows that he is in it with his players thick and thin, no matter what. He's also not afraid to suspend players that don't follow the team rules, including your best linebacker when you needed him in a big-time situation against Navy. But he did the right thing there. You're never going to have an Art Briles situation at Baylor when you have a Tom Herman at U of H.
I would never say never, but you feel like the integrity
I'm okay.
is there.
I agree with you. Never may be a strong word. I just don't see it. I see Tom Herman is constantly in touch with what's going on with his football program. He's never going to get out prepared. He motivates the hell out of his team. And he's obviously made a huge turnaround at this university, and he's done nothing but great things. I would hate to see him leave. I would love to see him stay. And if Hunter Yurecek is true to his word and they do something that, short of a phenomenal offer, which could still come from one of those big-time institutions with all that money flying around, I would be ecstatic for U of H if they were able to keep Tom Herman.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good win. The problem is Tom Herman willing to be at a school in a conference that's always going to be playing second fiddle to the Power Five conferences?
Well, his non-conference schedule would have to really be...
Well, you're always still going to struggle to be able to make a playoff. I mean, and as let's face it, right now he's the darling of college football. Uh-huh. I mean, that's what it is. And right now he seemingly can do no wrong. He seems to handle the situation appropriately. I worry that, at the end of the year, it's just going to be too much money and too much power and too much opportunity for U of H to overcome. And that's the problem with U of H not getting into the Big 12. Now, Anthony Munoz on Twitter has a good point. The Pac-12 needs to snap up U of H right away. That's true. I think U of H needs to find a conference, a Power 5 conference to land in. I said before, if anyone should be considering expanding, maybe somebody like the ACC. But the problem is all these schools are going to have to split cash with whoever they bring in. And are most of these schools going to be willing to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question. And the thing is that when you look at the grand scheme of things, and I've had several situations in a lot of different experiences in my career where you see it's rare to see it's and I would say it's not a small market, but in terms of the grand scheme of things in college football, it's not in a conference, so it's a small fish in the big pond. When you get someone that's committed, and you hope that he has that kind of commitment and dedication regardless of any of the other exterior circumstances, that he just loves Houston. He is a Texas kind of guy. He's had a lot of experience in the state of Texas. He's obviously had a lot of success since he's been in Houston, and he knows that he can recruit in his backyard with having to make all kinds of recruiting visits. There's a lot of things that make U of H attractive, except for the conference and the money.
Well, yeah, it makes them attractive as a stepping stone school. And I hate to say that. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that.
I'm with you.
But the problem is, look at Art Briles, Kevin Sumlin, and now Tom Herman. They've all used U of H. They've done great things for the school,
right?
But they've used it as an opportunity to go out and get a coaching gig at a more prevalent school, like A&M or even Baylor in the Big 12. And that's why everyone at U of H was hoping that school could get a move to a Power 5 conference, because until that happens, they're always going to be a stepping stone school.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing, too, is what you really forget about in terms of what the big-time schools offer is it's not just about the contract money. With camps, with endorsements, with the fact that most people will offer a house, which is a mansion on campus or nearby, country club memberships, all these different things that U of H in a metropolis like Houston doesn't have, those all factor in for most people in most situations where they're being courted as a head coach. And like it or not, those are going to factor in. It's going to be part of the process.
What were you going to say, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think Tom Herman is committed, and I think the integrity that he has, and I think his family loves University of Houston, but I also think that what the scary part of Tom Herman leaving the University of Houston is that, and the AD actually alluded to this a little bit earlier in that interview on Nate and Crate, was that he doesn't expect to see the growth that University of Houston has been able to have over the past 4 or 5 years in the coming years, even with Tom Herman at the helm. He expects it to kind of come at a plateau. So if Tom Herman makes that exit, I think it make that plateau even worse.
I think you.
It could be a downslope.
I think you go downslope in a hurry.
Yeah,
yeah. So here's the thing, Barry. I'm also going to do this because I love our listeners.
Okay.
I kind of let one down.
Give away.
No, I kind of let one down yesterday.
I thought you were going to give away free.
Good try, Cody Armstrong.
Dang it!
Was tweeting me yesterday. Uh-huh. He wanted Buffalo Bills talk. There was no place to find Buffalo Bills talk. So he said, "Guess there'll never be any Bills talk today." Okay.
What would we talk about?
Shaq Lawson, Marcell Dareus, and how good can the Bills' defense be? That's one question that he asked. My question is, they've won 4 in a row, but they're going to play New England. Do they have a chance? Since the Bills have already won the first game.
Where it's in Buffalo?
I believe this one would be...
I think they went on the road.
I think you're right. There's Sexy Rexy.
They'd be New England on the road, right?
Yeah. So I think so. Sexy Rexy would have a
I think because it's at home, yeah, they have a chance.
I mean, they're playing well. Look, I mean, Tyrod is playing out of his mind right now. And God, I mean, their whole season could have come crumbling down this weekend when... who's their tailback? Came over from the Eagles? Shady.
Yeah.
McCoy. He had 2 touchdowns, and he got hit across the side of the knee, and it looked nasty in real time. And he not only came back in the game, but got another touchdown. If he goes down, that especially with Sammy Watkins already down, you got problems. But look, the Bills are a Cinderella story in the AFC, and Rex Ryan's got them playing really good football. And with that, we wrap up Bills talk for another half century.
Well, hold on. I'll give him some hope.
Okay.
I'll give him some hope. Would it surprise you if I told you that the Bills had the highest plus-minus differential in the NFL?
Would that surprise you? They've won 4 in a row, so yeah, it'd be a little surprising.
Points
but I mean,
462 points against 103. That gives them a plus 59. Patriots, plus 58.
There's that analytics guy again doing number stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Jason, real quick before we go to break, you want to chime in on Tom Herman before we get out of that. But hey, Cody, I was true to my word. I even apologized to you last night. Now, Jason, you want to talk about Tom Herman. What do you got?
Yes, sir. Hey, so everybody keeps saying if Tom Herman wants to make the national charter playoffs, he needs to leave our conference. Well, if any team loses one game, they're not going to be in the playoffs anyways. If Houston run the table this year, they would have been in the playoffs. So why go to a bigger conference and have a tougher road to get to the playoffs, whenever you can stay at this conference and have a better chance of running the table and actually making the playoffs.
Money, recruiting,
well, not even that, but
perks. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people leave.
Okay, so I get the money part, but everybody keeps saying that
they
won't make the playoffs if you leave the conference. Well, if they run the table this year, they would have beat Louisville. They beat Oklahoma. At the end of the year, Navy might be ranked. That would have been 3-19 they beat.
Jason, slow down.
I have to stop you because you're throwing out running the conference or running the table like that's just easy to do. No, it's very difficult for teams in a Power 5 conference to run the table. U of H showed that they lost to Navy, and you're throwing. If they run the table, it's not that easy to do, regardless of what conference you're in.
It's easier in the conference that Houston's in, correct?
Yeah, but then that backfires on you
because you lost to UConn last year, you lost to Navy this year.
Well, not only that, but it backfires on you because now your strength of schedule is so poor.
That's true too.
If you're in the American Conference and you run the table, congratulations. But your strength of schedule, you're going to lose out to an SEC one loss team.
If they beat UConn last year, they would have been in the playoffs without a doubt.
Well, you're saying without a doubt.
Right?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean,
beating OU, if they would have run the table, and that includes a win against Louisville, absolutely. But you know what they got to go do? Now they got to go schedule the likes of OU's and hope that they hold up throughout the year.
That's what I just said. Their non-conference, as long as they're not in a conference, is going to have to be super strong, whereas the other big-time team's non-conference schedule is Mother Teresa School of the Blind.
Which is going to make it more difficult to run the table.
Yeah, and their sister schools. So I think that, look, do I agree? Last year, they were in the conversation for the Final Four if they hadn't lost to, but ifs, buts, candies, nuts. Again, I go back to if my aunt had outdoor plumbing, it'd be my uncle. You can't go back and look at that now. Even Tom Herman says you got to look in the windshield, not the rearview mirror. And in the windshield, unless you're in a big-time conference, your strength of schedule is going to have to be ramped way up to try and compete with all these different big-time conference schools and the schedules that they hold because they just play their conference games. That's the point we were trying to make. We make lots of points up until 4 p.m. ESPN 97.5 FM.
Sporting Goods Week on ESPN 97.5.
I'm trying.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey now. We're back for another 25 minutes or so. It's Barry Laminack, Joel Blank, and Nick Sharara behind the glass as we have had another stellar Tuesday afternoon show. We are getting you details on everything crazy and realistic in sports and otherwise. By the way, this story coming out from ESPN last night during that Indians-Blue Jays game. Terry Francona, which I thought he gave up tobacco, but evidently he didn't. In the first inning of Game 3, Francona lost his tooth in his tobacco. So he says, I'm pissed now. I'm hot. I called James down and I gave him my tooth. I said, you call our team dentist. Tell him I'm going to beat him up, so to speak. Tell the team dentist he better find me an effing dentist up here tomorrow. So then the trainer comes back in the third inning and says, tell me you found a dentist. He goes, I came to tell you about Trevor. I said, screw Trevor and his finger. I need to talk about my tooth. And at 1 a.m., he had the tooth put back in Toronto.
Toothgate.
Interesting evening. At least he got a win. I think, as Keenan McCardo would tell you, as long as you got the W, nothing else matters.
I'd have just put it under my pillow.
Okay.
Get some cash for it.
Well, the tooth fairy fits. Nothing, Tooth Fairy. You can go on with your Texan story you want to talk about.
Oh, no. I'm just asking, did you guys see this picture of the two Texas offensive linemen blocking each other?
Uh-uh.
There's a picture circulating. I'm going to retweet it right now. Go follow at Barry's Funny if you're not following me. There is a picture of the Texans offensive line. Brock is rolling out. And I can't tell who it is, but there it's 74 maybe. I can't say. But they're definitely blocking each other. And everyone, this started making the rounds, and they were like, what do you think about this? I think they got tired of hearing about they can't block, so they just started blocking everybody. Brock needs to get out of the way, or he can get some, too. He can get blocked. He ain't above getting blocked, either. But that just kind of, to me, that's a great summary of the Texans camp right now.
And you know what's funny? With all the injuries and all the different things that the Texans have endured, The offensive line has, even with all the different makeshift starting lineups, the line hasn't been that bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at this picture, they didn't give up one sack to the rest of the offensive line.
That's just, yeah.
I don't know why they're blocking each other, but it's hilarious. But yeah.
You've seen it happen before. Like, I forgot which game happened on, like, one of the noon games on Sunday where they just accidentally run into each other.
Well, that's one thing. But these guys are actually
they're
blocking
on the line.
They have each other by the neck.
Right.
Like, they have each other. Like, they're looking at each other, and it doesn't look like either one of them is releasing the block.
Well, that's what I was getting to. Do you think they're looking at each other? They're like, they just have their eyes closed and just looking.
Wait. First of all, how'd it go? Thank you.
That sounded like an NFL offensive lineman if I was
sounded like our, exactly sounded like our bathroom on the floor here. Yeah, it's crazy. But like I said, I don't think the line has been nearly as bad as I expected it to be this year. I think that's because of the fact that so much focus has been put on Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, well, there's that. Of course, there's also people who are saying he just doesn't have enough time. That's why he's rushing throws and throwing short and missing.
But look at what Lamar Miller's been able to do. Lamar Miller's killing it.
Lamar Miller killed it against the Colts.
No, overall he got more touches than anybody in the league, and his numbers are pretty damn good.
Because you're factoring in the Colts game. Before that, he was averaging 70-something yards a game. That's not killing it by any stretch of the imagination.
I'd say total yards per game, he's been doing all right.
Yeah, because you're factoring in the 140-some-odd he got.
Well, all right is okay leading up to. He was doing all right leading up to the Colts. 70-something?
All right.
No, it's borderline bad.
Don't give in. Nicholas,
I think it's Nicholas.
Stand
your ground, man.
Stand your ground. Don't give in to him.
Don't give in to me just because I'm right.
He's not right. He just likes to think he is. And when you give in, it gives him credence to believe he is. So don't do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm thinking 70. What did you say? 76 yards.
74. You don't know if that's true. Yeah. Analytics Barry has gotten to the point where he's such a number-driven nerd that he just starts throwing it out there.
You are the statistics guy.
And you believe it.
I am, because I use it to support my arguments. I don't just talk statistics only. I give opinions. I stand by those opinions, even if someone messes with me on Twitter, a lot like Joel did with the SEC. But I also provide stats to back up my opinions, which are usually right.
Not if the stats are not accurate.
That's an accurate stat.
In this case, it may be. Oh, I'm just saying. If all those things on that verbal resume you just gave us were true, you'd be sitting in Colin Cowherd's spot right now.
Well, everything on the internet is true. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, ask people at other stations at sports teams.
Jason Hebert said he wanted to make sure that we knew that last fantastic caller, Jason, wasn't him. He just wanted to point that out. Someone asked if the Cowboy, the old man, someone asked if that was Boomhauer from earlier. That was hilarious.
Cowboy was a good caller. We want to have him back. He could be a regular. I liked him. I'm just saying. He was a good dude. You got anything else?
Someone said U of H has never run the table before in their history. How can the callers say it's that easy? That was my point. Like, running the table, you don't just throw out, yeah, but if they run the table. No, dude, that's the hard part. Like, you're just tossing that aside like it's easy to do. That's the difficult part in college football. Conference be damned. It's hard to run the table.
Yep.
They lost to Navy. That's going to tell you how easy it is to run the
just
table.
Just like last year they lost to UConn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be recognized as a little bit more than an oh-by-the-way factor that I think people are looking past. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
So here's the thing. We were big fans of the Bennett brothers. We talked about Michael and Martellus last week and the show, the E60 that ran, which was phenomenal. I hope you saw it, Nick. But Barry and I saw it.
Yeah.
And now there might be more fuel to the fire for the Bennett brothers. Uh-oh. If you saw what I saw, what the NFL saw from one of the dirtiest players in the league. Talk about that more next. ESPN 97.5 FM.
This is Dick's Sporting Goods Week on ESPN 97.5.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, up until 4 o'clock with Nick Sciarra. We got one segment left, and I mentioned before the break that the Bennett brothers are very funny people, but I know one of the Bennetts is not very happy these days, and that is Martellus, because Martellus Bennett was playing for his team, the New England Patriots, this past weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals, and the notoriously dirty Vontaze Burfict decided that he would take a very cheap, low shot at the side of Bennett's knee. You have to go see the video if you haven't seen it. The NFL is reviewing that as well as the fact that he tried to stomp on LeGarrette Blount as part of that game. And this is the same guy that basically, along with Pac-Man Jones, cost them their playoff game against the Steelers with brutal late hits and targeting and everything else, and then went absolutely nuts and got suspended to start the season. But I'm sure Martellus is going to have plenty to say because it was nasty. Barry, you just watched the video, and your take on it was?
Well, I think you said Travis had mentioned that it looked like the pass was in the area, and I agree with that because at first when I watched it, I thought, somebody said he was stumbling. The announcer actually said, no, I don't think it was intentional. He looked like he stumbled. No, he didn't stumble. He dove at his legs, but when you go back and watch the replay, you see the ball kind of in the area as it passes by. Mm-hmm. So I could believe that he thought that ball may have been intended for Bennett and was going to go in for the tackle. So I think that might be the outcome that they
so can, the article
gets concluded from this.
For NFL.com says, the Bengals linebacker hit Bennett low on a pass intended for Danny Amendola from Tom Brady, and the hit occurred away from the play. Amendola was in the middle of the field outside the left hash mark and from the line of scrimmage, about 10 yards from the line of scrimmage was Bennett, and the pass play went about 15 to 20 yards down the field. But Bennett was not liking it and was looking for him after the play and had plenty to say after the play. But Burfict, because of his history, is definitely going to be reviewed anyway. But Bennett said after the game that Burfict apologized for the low blow. He said he didn't try to do it, but it's part of the game. Stuff happens. I was a little shocked with all he had to say during the E60. Yeah. That's the only quote we got out of Martellus Bennett.
Well, I'm literally going through this frame by frame. So Bennett is about 3 yards from the line of scrimmage at the first down marker. Mm-hmm. Amendola is about 13 yards, so he's 10 yards down the field from Bennett. But they're both equally...
In terms of the direction?
Yeah, they're kind of lined up, right? So it's just Amendola's 10 yards further down the field. But if you're looking at the frame that I'm looking at, they're both equally far from the hash mark, the left hash mark. So I could see why as a defender, if you see Brady dropping back and starting to release, it may look like that he's passing the ball to Bennett, even though it's going to Amendola 10 yards behind everybody. So I don't know in this case that I think that this was a dirty play. I mean, maybe it wasn't the nicest tackle in the world to be aiming at.
His reputation's going to help
exactly
a lot in this
but
case.
But I don't know that I agree that it was dirty because I could see where you might mistake the fact that Brady drops back and in that same line of sight throws a ball that looked like it could have been intended for the man three yards from the ball as opposed to 10 yards behind him.
Well, unlike you, I'm not trying to stir it up and go against you very seriously. But
I think it was a dirty play?
I think because of his history and because what I've seen out of this guy and the fact that I don't think he can control his emotions very well, I think that my first inclination looking at the video was that he did it purposely.
Yeah. Well, and I could see that because, like you said, his history. I wouldn't blame anyone for thinking that.
So here's some food for thought for the Brock Bowl coming up on Monday, which I'm sure we're going to talk plenty about this week.
Oh, Broswiler.
Denver Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall and cornerback Chris Harris Jr. counting down the days until the Brock Bowl. No ill will towards Brock, Marshall said of the Texans quarterback. I'm happy he got paid, but it's competition. We want to kill him. Harris is hoping to capitalize on Osweiler's aggressive, turnover-prone style. He says, quote, he's a gunslinger. He's also forcing a lot of throws. We know that he left us. It's going to be great. I'm pretty sure that he wants to win, and we want to beat him bad and get a lot of interceptions. We will see how that plays out in the coming days. Trey Wingo of ESPN also piling on for $37 million, guessing the Texans were hoping Brock Osweiler was better than 27th in completion percentage, 29th in yards per attempt, and 25th in quarterback rating.
Truth hurts.
Yeah, those not so good.
You can't deny those numbers.
And Ross Tucker chiming in. Ross Tucker of the NFL chiming in at Ross Tucker NFL. Osweiler's new nickname, Wild Thing, throws everything as hard as he can. No idea where it's going. Meet Rick Vaughn, Brock Osweiler. So we've got that going for us, but the Brock Bowl is upon us. It's going to be interesting because, again, second straight week on a national TV stage, and it's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out because, again, much like Rodney Harrison, Chris Collinsworth and company, who were piling on and really pointing out every single bad throw and every read he missed and every open wide receiver, it's not going to get any easier when you get a quarterback guru like John Gruden to go nuts on you on a Monday night game.
I don't feel sorry for him, though. Hey, if you're going to take the money and be the $72 million man and perform like he's performing, that's what's going to happen. People are going to break down your film and point out your flaws, especially if you're underperforming based on the value of your contract.
But again, why wouldn't you? I mean, you can't, as every even Trapp and Keenan and guys that played in the league, Sean Salisbury will tell you, you can't be mad at a guy for taking the money. If it's there, hey, someone was dumb enough to offer it to you, you have to be smart enough to take it. But at the same time, this is what provides all the criticism for the organization, because you go out of your way to take a small sample size and spend a lot of money. And now, not that you have buyer's remorse yet, but with every passing game, he throws another at least pick, one pick. And in the process, misses a lot of guys, makes a lot of bad reads. As I keep saying, he keeps staring down receivers, and it's going to catch up with them. A lot of people are being critical of the Cowboys and the praise of Dak Prescott, saying of the teams that they beat, when you talk about the Niners and you talk about some of the teams that had a really piss-poor record, he's not doing as much as people think. You can look at Brock Osweiler on the flip side and say, aside from two really quality opponents, which you got thumped in, the games the Texans are winning are not against, you know, world-beating opponents.
Oh, no.
In the fact that he definitely has got to step up sooner rather than later, or this season's going to get out of here.
Yep. Well, let me give you some hope.
Oh, keep hope alive,
Texans
please.
Fan. We pointed out last week, I believe, there was a pattern in his interceptions. He had thrown one in week
That's
one,
right.
two in week two, yep. one in week one, two in week three, and then two in week four. So he was going 1-2-1-2. Well, guess what? He was supposed to throw two interceptions against the Colts.
One.
He only threw one, so that means he's getting better.
But,
right?
As in the Matt Schaub pick six fest, at least he still kept that streak alive. Now seven straight games with at least one pick.
He has eight interceptions.
And you know what? For all you people that just can't get enough of stirring it up, that also have brought up Tom Savage during the course of this program, guess who one of the two quarterbacks in the NFL that doesn't have a pick this year is?
Who?
Brian Hoyer.
Oh, wow.
Just had to throw that out there. And Brian Hoyer was a short hair short of 400 yards passing in his first game as a Bear.
Oh, boy.
That won't continue.
Yeah, that won't be brought up ever again.
I use the phrase a lot when talking about the Brian Hoyers and Ryan Fitzpatricks of the world. They'll regress to the mean. They're going to have good games, there's no doubt, but they will regress to the mean.
There's another guy you bring up that got yanked last night, but you can't fault him for taking the money, and the fact that he held out and really pushed the envelope.
That's the sad part.
Yeah, and he got the money, but Ryan Fitzpatrick has absolutely crapped the bed.
Yeah, he looks awful. Stinking up the joint right now.
Texans Ryan Fitzpatrick for the most part, again, after having kind of a breakout whirlwind-type season last year. And Brandon Marshall, the same guy that was saying, I got to have my boy Fitz, and Fitz needs to get his because we need him back. Based on some of the looks he was giving Fitzpatrick when he came back to the huddle last night, I think his whole temperament and his opinion changed.
Yeah, I take back all the good things I said about you, man. Yeah. Now give me the damn ball. Oh, that's another
Everybody was so sold on the fact that he would do well in their system, and he only did well in their system, what, eight games, I want to say?
Yeah. Even Todd Bowles was looking like he had the Lombardi quote tucked in the front of his mind, like, what the hell is going on out there? And that's Todd Bowles going back to Arizona, where he's from, and where he had coaching success as a D coordinator. That had to be tough to take last night, because that was not a close game from the get-go.
No. And I don't know why on Sunday when we did picks, I picked the Jets like an idiot.
Did you?
I did, because I really felt like the team was close. It's kind of like the Chargers. It's just they you know, the Chargers have won a few more games, but I feel like the Jets had enough talent, and that there has been some, they've had some bad breaks, they've had a couple of bad games, but I mean, Arizona wasn't looking like world beaters.
No, and I mean, selfishly, I wanted Arizona to keep losing because everybody said they were coming to Houston and they were going to be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl, and they've gotten off to a bad start. But Arizona just has way too much talent on both sides of the football to continue to play at the level that they started off on, as opposed to Carolina, which there was a few, and I want to say just one or two national reporters that basically went out and said at the start of the year, Carolina would not be a playoff team. And I was like, they're crazy. They're nuts. There's no way that happens. And now it looks like they are in shambles. They continue. And you can't fault Cam either, because they were way down. Cam brought them way back. They missed an extra point, which really factored into the final, but then they lose by a field goal and look like they went from one of the best defensive teams in football last year. And I can't seem to think that it's all Josh Norman, but they look like they can't stop anybody.
No, and my thing about, did you see Cam's press conference? Dude, don't be pouting like that. Yeah. Don't be a baby. Listen, you can't be all like, hey, look at me, I'm having fun because we're winning, and then pout like a baby when you lose. Either you're going to talk to the media, win or lose, or you're not. And if you don't, that's fine. But Now, I'm not saying anyone should accept losing, but at least be a professional.
Well, that's the thing. Go out there. Reason like, where, that
every other
where
quarterback
say,
that loses is.
We talk about the money.
And be professional enough to give an answer and just say, well, we need to play better.
Don't even say that. Just say it from, be professional enough. When you are professional enough to accept the money and all the endorsements and all the commercials and all the accolades, then understand that for all the highs, there are lows.
Yep.
And you got to roll with those as well.
And just don't pout like that. Oh, that just infuriates me. Like, he's all fun, lovey-dovey Cam. Look at me. I'm so funny. I'm the Superman. But then when they're 1-5, he won't talk. No, man. Just sit up there and take your lumps. Somebody said it best. That, I think it was it Tony Dungy? Maybe it was Tony Dungy who said, he needs to be a leader. They need a leader right now.
Yeah.
And the best thing he could have done is shown his leadership skills at that press conference instead of doing what
next
he did.
Next question.
Cam, yeah, there you go. There's Cam. Next question. Cam and OBJ probably need to kind of professional it up a little bit in terms of the off, one on the field, one off the field. But we'll always keep it professional for you here. 1-4, Monday through Friday, ESPN 97.5. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
ESPN 97.5.